हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। So Deepika, then we're still at the end of Appendix 2, then the Vasudhara. So then it mentions, where's this one? Oh, here's I'm not sure why it's coming here. As it says about the Chedi Raj, because he was earlier, wasn't he? Where was Chedi Raj mentioned? I mean, not Chedi Raj. Chedi Raj is Uparichara Vasu. Somehow or another, I always thought it was Bali Maharaj, but Chedi Raj. Because remember we had before where it mentioned about Chedi Raj. In the Sankalpa. About worshiping Uparicharya Vasu and chanting the Ayush Shukta. Okay, so then here there's a footnote, Vasudhara, Chedi Raj Puja, says Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his Madhurya Kadambini describes three devotees as most magnanimous: Sri Nityananda Prabhu, Jatabharat, and Chedi Raj Uparicharya Vasu. Oh, okay. Jatabharat, okay. The story of Uparicharya Vasu, the great king, Vaishnav king of Chedi, is described in the Shanti Parva Mahabharata and in the Vishnu Dharmotra Purana. Uparicharya was cursed by, I guess, the rishis to go to Patala, but even there he continued to worship Lord Narayana. When the daityas saw him, they attacked him with their weapons, but were unable to hurt him. They then tried preaching atheistic philosophy to him, but to no avail. Finally, seeing the daitya's determination, Chedi Raj Vasu bestowed his mercy upon them, converting them all into devotees. The demigod, seeing the condition of this exalted Vaishnava, blessed him that while residing in Patala, the pangs of hunger, thirst, weakness, and distress would not affect him. He would drink the streaks of ghee called Vasudhara that Brahmanas offered to him with concentrated minds and sacrifice. Soon Lord Vishnu sent his carrier Garuda to bring Chedi Raj Uparicharya Vasu to Vaikuntha. Okay, so then it says, on the east or north wall of the room in which the puja is being performed, once a draw with sindoor, a half moon, a triangle with the point at the top, and a swastika. Under these drawings, make seven dots with sindoor starting from left to right. The drawing should be on the same level as one's navel. Taking a piece of kusa grass with a tip dipped in ghee, touch each dot so that the ghee runs down the wall towards the floor. While touching the dots with ghee, one should chant. Whatever brilliance you find in gold, or whatever power in the cows, what is this? That is the strength of the pure spirit. Please may you fill me with these. Okay, so then what do you call it? Whatever brilliance, okay, whatever brilliance you find in gold, because that, in other words, the brilliance in gold, and that's the attractive feature of the gold. And then whatever power in the cows, like, the cows, then, they can plow. They give milk. That situation in the mode of goodness, and that means that their situation, not the particular soul, is the strength of the pure spirit. So therefore that brilliance that comes from that attractive feature of Krishna, because they're part and parcel of Krishna. And in that power of how you say that aspect of service, may we have that. That's the whole idea. So from the devotees, then take up that devotional mood. And once you're in Chedi Raj in the pot, offer four, five upachars that have all been offered to Krishna first, right? So the offer to Krishna, and then offer to him, chant the following pranam mantra. O King of Chedi, I offer my respects unto you, obeisances unto you. O great soul, affected by a curse, you endure hunger and thirst. O Chedi Raj, I offer you my respectful obeisances. And then, O Chedi Raj Vasu, please forgive any mistakes. One should chant the Ayush Sushupta. Okay, so this is all then part of that Sankalpa, because it mentioned about worship of Chedi Raj and the Ayush Sushupta. So here's the Ayush Sushupta. And so then this says then, let us attain long life. Okay, so you're right. It was about Ayush, meaning the life. Full span of life. Let us attain full span of life. O Creator, supply him a lot of progeny. May we live 100 years under your care. Purify my lifespan. Purify me for the attainment of full power. Right? So full power would mean being fully absorbed in the Lord, like we see is. Otherwise, this is all part of the Chedi Raj Puja. So he was famous for being one of the most merciful devotees. So then that whole point is that long life means the whole life is all dedicated to Krishna, and full power means we are fully absorbed in Krishna. You are the purifiers of the earth and creators of the heaven. All the waters flowing from the dams hear you. The nectar flows from you to increase my life and brahminical power together with prosperity for whoever the name of the Yajaman who is most brilliant in this act of and the name of the function. So then it also becomes part of the Sankalpa, that whole beginning part. Okay. Bhojapatra Utsarga. Right. So in other words, just as we're worshiping, it means if we're worshiping Nityananda Prabhu and these aren't done, that's fine. But it's just in these technical points like that, because these are all being done for people, devotees' benefits on the religious platform. So then these make all things nice on that platform also. They purify that religious platform and bring one more focused on the main platform of Krishna consciousness. So Bhojapatra Utsarga, offering the Bhojapatra to a qualified Brahmana. Right, so this would be that program that Advaitacharya did. He had all the Brahmins there, and then he's respecting all the Brahmins, they're all being worshipped, but then the Bhojapatra is given to whoever's the senior most. And he gave it to Haridas Thakur. Some didn't appreciate it, but the point is to who's the most qualified, right? Once you prepare a large plate, the Bhojapatra, with uncooked rice, dal, ghee, salt, uncut fruits and vegetables, betel nuts, sweets, and cloth, right? So the ghee means it's in some kind of container. It doesn't mean you pour ghee all over this. So in other words, these all items that you can offer to the Brahmana, and then they can take that and use that for their particular pujas and whatever they're doing. The Yajaman should put his right hand turned upwards on the plate, and with his left hand take some water from the Achman cup and sprinkle the items after reciting each of the following. Then sprinkling with water the first time, all respect to the offering of food with all ingredients, and again sprinkling this time to Vishnu, all respects to his presiding deity Vishnu. Right, so you have the ingredients, you have the deity Vishnu. And then the third sprinkle, all respects to the recipient of the offering, the Sattvata Brahmana. Right. So you're offering, respecting the ingredients, the deity of the ingredients, and then who it's being offered to. So in the old style of worship, then we see Sanatana Goswami is mentioning in Hari Bhakti Vilas that this principle of you're respecting the items that are going to be offered, the deity of that item and who it's going to be offered to. So if you're offering to Krishna, then you would, let's say, the Artic lamp, you're respecting the Artic lamp itself, then whoever is the specific deity of the Artic lamp, and then you're respecting Krishna, then you're going to pick up the lamp and then actually offer it. So it's a much more technical. So this must be a very, old system of worship where you're seeing all the different aspects. I guess the Adiatmic, Adidaivic, Adibhutic, all the different elements that are there. Then taking water again in the left hand, he should chant Om Vishnu, Om Tat Sat, and then he goes through the what do you call it? The Sankalpa at the beginning of the rite called this. I offer the Sattvika Brahmana named of this Gotra, this offering of food with all ingredients offered to Vishnu for giving supreme pleasure to the Petris of the Gotra and this Gotra. Dakshin in the form of money should be offered to the Vaishnava Brahmana on a plate before offering. The Yajaman should offer Gandha Pushpa to the Dakshin, saying, "These are the fragrant flowers. I offer obeisances to this golden coin. I also offer obeisances to the presiding deity, Sri Vishnu," right? Because he's also the presiding deity of Lakshmi, like that. He should chant the following Sankalpa, another one. At the beginning of this rite called, I give to the Sattvika Brahmana suitable donation, equivalent to gold, on the occasion of the giving of food with all ingredients. He should now offer the dakshin to the Vaishnava Brahmana. So you're going to have this plate that has everything on it, and then he's going to have a separate, plate or envelope or that has, traditionally it'd be have a gold coin in it, but if not, then something equivalent to that. In other words, the point is that dakshins are always done nicely. Because the better that means, the more qualified the person, and the better the dakshin, the better the results you're going to get. It's direct. It's not like, oh, we chant Hare Krishna, so we don't have to get into giving much dakshin or anything. But then, why are you doing this sacrifice? If you're doing these things, do it properly, because that's what it says. It's better to not do it than give an improper dakshin. Because otherwise, then the whole point, as Kapila Muni mentions in the third canto, in the worship of the deity, then Kapila Muni mentions that if one worships the deity nicely but doesn't respect all other living entities, then the Lord's not very satisfied by his worship. Right? It's progressive, but one should understand it's very neophyte. So the one who gives a proper dakshin, then that's go, because you have to see it's what are they doing, what's going on, what are the benefits, and that whole thing like that. Then Vamadevi Ganam, the prayers of the Lord of glorification of the Lord. This is that Kaya Naschitra Bhuvatuti. So this is three prayers to Vamadeva. I think it's for those three steps. So the Lord is worshipable, he is our helper, constantly expanding. He is our eternal friend. He displays this through his wonderful activities. Okay. So yeah. He is our helper. So the Lord is there. He's worshipable. He's our helper. He's our eternal friend. Right? So the Lord is always there with us. He's the one that created the material world. So we have the opportunity to come back to him. But because of the aspect of also his kindness and the friendship, that he allows us that aspect of free will. And because of free will, then we may use it in a positive way or not. The idea is the jivas that come here, I mean, it's all jivas, they should as an individual, acknowledge and accept their position and relationship with the Supreme Lord voluntarily. This is something they want to do. They want to be servant of the Lord. They want to render service. They want to serve the Vaishnavas. So in service to the Lord. So that aspect. So those who have done it within the Prakat pastimes, then they just stay in, and then they move into the apricot, and then they stay like that. So they're called Nitya Siddha. It means eternally liberated, and it means they were never conditioned. Then those that come here, they're Nitya Badha. Means they don't do that from the pastimes. They don't surrender to Krishna. So when the pastimes wind up and go into apricot, then that those living entities go into the material energy as Lord Brahma, and then from there they come down until, you know, they do all the whole round of the 8,400,000, and then, you know, gradually by Agyata Sukriti, by association of the Vaishnavas, you know, unknowingly, not knowing that the understanding of devotional service, then they come to the point where then they are able to take up, get Shraddha and take up devotional service, right? And so then they make that progress determination that they want to do this to please Krishna until they come to the platform of pure devotional service. And then from there, they come to the platform of prema, you know, like that. So he displays this through his wonderful activities. He is an eternal friend because he's coming to the material world to perform wonderful activities, right? That's what he's doing. He's trying to attract the living entities back to their natural position in the spiritual realm in relationship with him, right? Second verse, you are the worshipable absolute truth and the source of all pleasurable experience. Being strong, you break the opposition of the foes, right? So the pleasurable experience, that's the actual reason why we take anything up. You, like Krishna mentioned the Gita, by accepting a higher position of consciousness, you give up the lower. So when we experience on a higher level, we give up the whatever is the experience on the lower level. So he's the source of all pleasurable experiences. So all the way up to this, you know, the pinnacle of prema, those all are expanding from him because it's his potencies. And he is Ananda. I mean, so he's Ananda Maya Vyasat. So from him, all pleasure comes. So everyone's seeking Krishna. And since everything you're dealing with is Krishna, then whatever you may find of interest or, you know, interest or happiness in whatever it is that you're doing in context of whatever you're doing it with, of this energy that you see, that's all, that potency is still coming from Krishna, that the item exists, that's this sat potency, that it has particular potencies, and by dealing with it, there's particular transformations with giving particular results, that's Krishna, and that you get an experience from that that you would call happiness, that's Krishna. So everything is just Krishna. So him being strong, you break the opposition of the foes. So the foes are this lust, anger, greed, envy, attack. I mean, what do you got? Lust, greed, anger, illusion, madness, and envy. And so these get in the way of our applying properly our individuality and our free will towards Krishna and developing that individual relationship. So we basically stay in the material world with some mundane identity. That's why it's always giving up the mundane identity that I'm this gross and subtle body, and that I'm the soul and I'm eternal servant of Krishna. And then from that, we start to develop our individual appreciation and relationship with Krishna. Right? Then the third one, you are the protector of those who sing your praises. You are affectionate to those who accept you as a friend. Be with us 100 times to give us protection. Right? So then those who are, you know, absorbed in the Lord, singing his names. So that's what we see again. It's about the chanting of the holy names. That's always going to be the best element. You are affectionate, those who accept you as a friend. That, so a friend means we see, as we mentioned in the nine processes of devotion, then Sakyam is where you see is that this is what pleases the Lord. I want to do what pleases the Lord. Right? The Dasyam is he's the Lord. I should surrender to him. You know, that's the best for me. And then however much we understand the devotion, but Sakyam, it's about, this is what pleases the Lord. In other words, Dasyam may have the element of renunciation of the material world, but we're still going to see it in context of us, give it to Krishna. Sakyam means sannyas, that aspect where I see everything and all opportunities as opportunities to serve Krishna, to please him. And so I do everything to please him. So that's what then it's talking about. we come to that platform. Be with us 100 times to give us protection. So may, you know, may 100 times, may always be there with us. May we never forget. Because otherwise, one time we remember, then we forget. No, be 100 times. Because if 100, something happens 100 times, we generally tend to remember that. Right? And give us protection. So protection means from the, you know, non-devotional tendencies and all these kind of aspects. Okay, so that ends the common rites. And so those are the rites that would generally be done in the morning, you know, some of them the night before, for, or they're done twice for the Adivas, and then in the morning before the program. And then depending upon what it is, then right after that, then you could start the, whatever the program, or if the Muhurta is later in the day, then you do the main samskar and ritual later in the day. But this is generally always done in the early morning. It could also be done at, if you're spreading it out, you know, then this could be done at a particular time during the day that others can take part in. If it's one of those things where they may be inclined, or you want to, you can take the time and explain everything as we go, then it works out very nicely. But otherwise, it's done in the morning, so you just have those few people involved, and that's all you really need, like that, and like that, yeah. So Appendix 3, additional samskars. So these are, besides, because there's technically, you know, so many samskars, and so the main ones that have been given here, so other samskars are parts of or subsections of the main ones that have already been done. So it's not that there's the dasa samskar, that there's, when you say that there's more samskars, they're just subsections of that. Just like you have 16 items of worship, and that expands into 64. Like that, but they're all, it's the same thing being done in different occasions, different situations, and like that. So Karnaveda, piercing the ears. Then according to Shushruta says the ears of the child should be pierced for protection from diseases and for decoration. Right? Other Ayurvedic texts describe how when the nerves in the ear are pierced at this time in the child's life, lust is decreased in latter years. Right, so then it's always a good thing. Like what you see is if they haven't been pierced early so that they're done, then they're just worn, as it mentions, for protection like that, and for decoration. And that's all. It's not a matter of lust. But you see is later when people pierce them, then it's due to lust. They want to look attractive and beautiful, and it has that element to it. So it means it'll have some benefits, but they see is here, as he specifically mentioned in the child. Then it means at that time you don't see it because that lust is not there. But then when it does come up, then there will be that purity will be there. Same with, we see with the Maida Yajna, what at the birth ceremony, that those mantras and that, you know, taking of the barley and gold and ghee, at that time, it gives intelligence at that time when they come into that, you know, into puberty. That's when you see as it starts to work. Before that, you know, generally all these, you'll see as they're going to be a nice child. You know, and so many children when they're small are nice, but when they hit puberty or adolescence, then we start seeing, then things start to go a little bit out of, yeah, not always as ideal. But here, by doing all these stuff here, then you'll see is that later at that time, that's when you're going to see is this person is very unique, right? Now, if they're already unique before that, that's another thing. But you know, there's always going to be is that the parents always find that, you know, the young, their child is always going to be the most wonderful, and that's fine. And you know, it's just like every parent can say their child is most wonderful. It's not a problem because of their affection. But we're going to see is from doing these things, there's going to have an effect later that's going to be unique that you don't see in other kids. So when they're small, then it'll be common, but as they get bigger, then you see now it's not common. It's unique. Okay, the ceremony should be performed on the 6th or 7th month after birth. So then you see it goes along, 6th or 7th after birth. Okay. Although, though it may be performed along with the Chuddakarna ceremony or at Upanayanam, like that. Okay, so it can be done on its own at the sixth to seventh, though you can also do Chuddakarna when you do it the first year, the third year, or fifth year. So the fifth year would probably mean the Upanayanam. But it should be performed during the waxing phase of the moon on an auspicious day before noon, right? Because you're going to, you know, take bath and everything like that. So then waxing moon, so everything's increasing and like that. The child should be held in the lap of the mother using a gold, silver, or iron needle. Then footnote 2, the Vira Mitrodaya Samskara Prakasha, now that's a name, says a gold needle gives elegance, but one can use silver or even iron needles according to his means. Other texts say that Brahmana and a Vaishya should use several silver needles, a Kshatriya gold, and a Shudra iron. So you can, it means if there's that kind of identity, you can do like that. Otherwise, then they would have the needles. And generally, one of the things that they would do, someone was telling me who would do these things, they were talking about the Brahminical thing, they have the child, then, well, this is if they're really small, but if they're older, a little bit older, like the girls are a little older, where you can kind of talk and interact, and you ask, okay, we're going to pierce your ears, and then you look very beautiful because we're putting, you know, the earrings and all that, so then they're interested. But they ask them, so you want to pierce your ears with, and they'd have all of these, with the gold ones, the silver ones, or the iron ones. So naturally, the, you know, especially the girl, she's going to pick gold. But the point that she chose, it takes away more of the fear and the worrying about the pain and all that, because she chose, no, I want these ones. So now she chose that. So, yeah. So these are just little things. But nowadays, if they're using, if you're doing it by hand, then, you know, then these are good. And if you're using those guns, I don't know if they use the guns on the babies, then if you have, you know, like that, you have a gold or silver ornament, then it's a gun. So technically you're piercing with gold or silver because what you're using is like that. Okay. The surgeon should first take the right ear of the boy or left ear of the girl, right? That's where you start, and pierce the ears with a single stroke, right? You know, don't get in there and, yeah, no, it's just one shot. So you have to have it in the proper place and then just right through. Gifts should be given to the Vaishnavas and the surgeon, right? So here we see is the surgeon is anybody who's doing any kind of piercing of the body, you know, for some purpose. So much of that, this could be, you know, the doctor, it could be the Brahmin, it could be, but it can also be the barber, right? Because the barber is also known as a surgeon, right? That's the thing is that nowadays, you know, you just have fancy barbers, that's all, you know, they went to school for a bit longer and all that and take more money. But otherwise, yeah, they do, that's what Prabhupada always thinks is, you know, oh yes, he's a surgeon, so it's so elevated. Prabhupada's kind of laughing in the Vedic culture. So that's done by the barbers, you know, like that. So, yeah. Vidyarambha, beginning education. This is performed when the child is five or the time or at the same time as the haircutting ceremony. Okay, what's this? Vidyarambha, but before Upanayanam. All right, that's at five, because then five, they can take it up. So then, you know, so in other words, all these things could go together. If you're doing the haircutting already when they're done earlier, at 1 year old or three, if not, then now at five, if it's already done, then if not, it's done before Upanayanam will be done. An auspicious day should be chosen when the sun is in the northern course, Uttarayana, right? So that's going to be better. The child should be bathed, dressed in fresh clothes and decorated. Parents should perform worship of Lord Vishnu. The teacher should face east, and the child should face him. On a silver plate, kumkuma should be sprinkled, and with a gold pen, the words Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya or Hare Krishna should be written and read three times by the child with the help of the teacher. If silver and gold are not available, other materials may be used, such as kusa grass or tulsi, right? You know, as the implement to write with. The child should pay as the base. So, in other words, the teacher's holding the hand and writing the letters, you know, showing them how to write. The child should pay his obeisances to the teacher, present the teacher with cloth and ornaments, and circumambulate the deities. The Brahmin should give blessings. Women who have husbands and children alive should wave lamps in front of the child. Dakshina should be presented to the Brahmanas. And prasadam should be distributed, right? So you see, it's a big thing because they're going to start education. So the whole point of of human life is to be educated in God consciousness. And then all these elements of the Veda and everything like that. Okay. Then, you know, it's more of a thing. You see everybody's decorated up, everything. Some of the other ones that doesn't mention, just like it's small, the baby's just there, you know, dressed in clean clothes, but it's not anything overly fancy. Pandavji, yes.
Maharaj, I just wanted to share something interesting. I read somewhere in Belarusia, some kind of Jewish community, they also had this type of samskara. I guess everybody had it. The first, the first day in school. So what they were doing, they would draw the first two letters or three letters on the board, I think something like wooden board, with honey. And then the children, they're supposed to literally eat this, these letters. And the idea is that this was supposed to establish the samskara, the impression that knowledge is very sweet, actually, and it's supposed to be taken internally. That means you have to realize it. It has to become part of your value system. Something like this. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, interesting, interesting. I mean, it kind of contaminated. It appears that they're taking that principle of the honey and taking internally and giving intelligence from the Maida Yajna, the birth Yajna, and then taking this of the writing at the Vidyarambha. Because, you know, you take it in Belarus, I mean, up that side, you know, it's been a long time since, you know, the Vedic cultural elements have been there. You know, in the case of them getting up there, who knows if they came from that side, they might have come from Iran, you know, and moved up there, you know, thousands of years ago or the different things. And so the being separated from the Vedic culture, then so many things come up. You know, but it's interesting that how basically every culture has these thumb scars in some form or another pre-Christianity. And once Christianity comes, then much of the time they would go. So here the Judaic, they would have theirs, whatever. So then those would be lasting for a time. But the other ones then until you know, the Christians or Islam come, they have these local things. Sometimes the major ones are somehow or another inducted into the Christian process, but otherwise then these things are lost. Like Christianity, I think there's no form of Vidyarambha. But like in the Judaic tradition, then they go to the yeshiva, which is like Gurukul. You know, you go to the school, the teacher's there, you learn the Torah, and you learn, you know, all the different rituals and whatever you're supposed to do. You know, you learn also your writing, your math, all those things like that. But it's more like would be, I'm not sure if they live there or if they just go during the day, but it's considered, you know, more of a sacred religious thing. So it's nice to see that then there's some kind of Vidyarambha there for, you know, to go along with that. Interesting, no?
Yeah, in my country also, until recently, they were doing this, that you put different items in the front of a child and he's supposed or she's supposed to choose one of them.
Oh, and what age did they do that?
A very early, Maharaj, early age. Maybe, I'm not sure, but maybe one.
Okay.
6 months, 1 year, something. When the child already can crawl and walk.
Crawl, okay, yeah. Otherwise, then it may be unfair, right? They're trying to get it. They can't get it. Yeah, no, it's amazing how all these things are there. I think Sahotramars was talking about that there was one, I'm not sure as if it was some archaeologist put this together or he was mentioning this or, you know, it's kind of a thing that it was being noticed that the culture around the world pre-Christianity was pretty much similar. You know, they had certain basic elements. They didn't connect it back to the Vedic, but they would see that there would be these common elements and common understandings of, you know, creation and, you know, basic things like that, and demigods and all these different things, that so many of these cultures had something more common to them like that. And then when Christianity went, then, you know, it's just that, and the, everything else goes, or Islam, when it goes, you get rid of all these things. So, yeah. But it's interesting that at one point, then these were all very. Yes, no?
Yes, Maharaj, thank you.
Okay. So then we'll move on. But you can see it's always the same thing of obeisances like that, and giving dakshin. Brahma's giving blessings. So you have here like women, husband, children should have lamps for the child. So this is similar to even like in the wedding ceremony, we have the people involved. Dakshin is given, prasadam is disputed. So it's made into a nice festival like that. So you see with all these different samskars, so you have all these samskars that you can have for the child up to 5 years old. And then in the community, there's so many children. So that means constantly there'll be something going on, you know, in the auspicious times, generally during the Uttarayana and all those things. Other things will happen whenever they happen. But, you know, throughout the year, there'll always be some occasions for either more close friends and relatives like that, or, you know, bigger, more community kind of based kind of things that's a little broader. So there's always some nice things going on where people can, you know, dress up, go, have some association, take prasad, do something auspicious, you know, something, worship the Lord, and all these things, other than just the temple, which will be the Pancharatrik and the chanting and the preaching, which is the Bhagavat. So this on the Vedic platform, it helps put together community. Right. Okay, appendix 4, then we have the mudras. Yeah, so then you have the different mudras and items that are there. Then you have the one-step kunda and the kundas, where you have the one step, you know, like we see, is we have those copper kundas. They have the feet on it, and then they stand like that, and so that's the one step, or the three step that we make out of the bricks, and then have the fire inside, or the standila, where one layer of bricks with sand on it. So any of these three can be used like that. And then choosing names, then it gives for the different months all the different names for the child depending upon the month. Then you can pick based on the constellation, right? So the 27 nakshatras, and then you get each quarter, you get the, you know, like an Ashwini, Chuche, Cho, La, then Bharani, Li, Lu, Le, Lo. And like that, then from there, then you pick a name, and then you can even use these other ones, you know, along with it, like that. Zodiac sign, then you get the, Asia, Aries, La, Risha, Taurus, Uva, Mituna, Kacha, Kartika, Baha, Simha, Leo, Ta, Kanya, Virgo, Pata, Tula, Libra, Rata, Richika, Naya, Bha, Pradhanus, and Makara, Taja. So it's another way. Oh, Kumba also, Koyas, Gasa, and Mina, Pisces, Dacha. Then the auspicious times. Then according to Vedic astrology, appendix 7. According to Vedic astrology, the samskars are recommended to be performed at particular auspicious times. For each samskar, the circumstances are different. We hope the appendix may be useful in finding the appropriate time for each samskar. Below are the names of lunar months used in astrology. And the brackets are the corresponding names used in the Vaishnava calendar. Right, so then they give all the names. You know, so it means in the Vedic, the Keshava, Narayana, Madhava, Govinda, Vishnu, like that. And Damodar is the Kartik. Right, and then the Bengali, Paush, Magh, Falgun, Chaitra, Vaishak. Yeah, like that. Then auspicious times, the nakshatras. It gives the, you know, the different nakshatras, the titis, second, first, like this, days, Sunday and Saturday, months, Mag, Falgun, Vaishak, Jaishtha, inauspicious times, you avoid the 6th, 8th, 12th, and 11th up to the Amavasya and Krishna Paksha. You avoid Thursdays, Chaturmasya, the 4 months from Shravan to Kartik aren't used. Because see, it's with a baby, then the samskar is done during the Chaturmas if they're born so that they fall there. It's not a matter of choice. It's based on when the birth of the child is. But for a marriage ceremony, that's something you're choosing a time. It's not based on anything else. So therefore, then, you know, you avoid the Chaturmas and, you know, things like that. So Garbhadan, impregnation, then you have the auspicious nakshatra. And then for the ideas, the days, Tuesday, Sunday, days, Monday, Thursday, Friday. It means inauspicious ones, titis, and days to avoid, Saturday. Other times, daytime, you don't use sunset, solar lunar eclipse, and anniversaries of mothers or fathers passing away, you know, or festival days. Like you just, you know, and then everything. All. So it leaves you plenty of time, but you still have to be careful. So that's why we generally stick to this. It means what we're doing here is this is the panchang, which is just the, considering the five angas or five branches of the astronomy. Then you pick the times, then you can always find a time, right? It means you have to be careful because you're avoiding certain days, but there'll always be a day. But if you're going, if you go more deep into it and go into the muhurtas based on, I mean, not muhurtas, but on the auspicious times by astrology, sometimes you can never find a time because it's, there's always some fault. Like that. Like I mentioned before, I remember one devotee was looking for that really good time. They checked and the astrologer really went into it, found the perfect time. It was after 3 years. And unfortunately, because then some big, you know, preaching program came up and some opportunity, then they couldn't take advantage of that time. And so, yeah. So stick to the panchang. You know, it has, it gives all the different things. You can just look at the thing calendar. You look at where those are, and then it just leaves you what days are left. Right? That's how it works. And then, so it's some work, but it's doable. You'll always get days. Pumsavana, right for the child. And then it gives all these different times, right? Samantanayanam. Okay. And then, Shoshayana. Jati karma, right? Because these ones, you just do it based on when it falls. It's not, you don't have to worry about the, and then here, jata karma, you don't have to worry about an auspicious time because you can't establish that. Some try to do, then they arrange and it'll be done. Child will be born of cesarean and all this, and some, you know, get right into it. But it mentions here, Parasara Muni says that if the Garbhadan samskar was properly done, the birth will automatically be at an auspicious time. Right? You don't have to worry like that. I remember one devotee who was, you know, into his, he was an astrologer. And, you know, so he did the Garbhadan at, you know, all proper times and all that. And then when it was coming up for time for the child to be born, then, you know, he's looking at the looking at the thing, and all the planets are bad, everything. So he's really worried about this and how, what's going to happen and this and that. But in any case, when the child was born, then afterwards, then he calculated, and there was this one small window where the planets were good. And the child was born at that time. And all those other aspects of all the influence of all the other planets that were bad for that whole like time period didn't have influence at that time. So as Parasara says, if the Garbhadan samskar is properly done, birth will automatically be at an auspicious time. So you don't, because you can't pick the time and you shouldn't, you know, worry about that. It's just whenever like that. Nishkramana, then, Namakarana. So the ceremony should be done on the 10th, 12th, or 101st day or one full year from the birth of the child. And at other times, that nakshatra is done before noon. And then, like that, times to avoid, the afternoons, evenings, festivals, times when the sun is entering the next sign. You know, so in other words, there's going to be other things happening. So pick a time when it can be done. So the idea of the samskara is also those ones that especially be attended by people and all that. then they should be done at a time when they're not going to conflict with another festival. So that's why there's always a little bit of how you say, times are given like that. Paushti Karma continued. Okay, this ceremony should be performed every month during the child's first year on the Titi and Paksha, waxing and waning moon, of the moon corresponding to the Titi and Paksha in which the child was born. So whatever that was, you just do that every month. You don't have to worry about if it's auspicious or not. Okay. Okay, then the Anaprasana, then it's recommending nakshatra. Best is the Janma nakshatra, the one he was born on. Not possible, then one of the other following, you know, time before noon, Gora Paksha, you know, when it's like that, then, you know, times to avoid, haircutting ceremony, then, yeah, you have your opportunity of the times. Okay, then Uttarayana is best for the northern course of the sun, like that. Then, unless it's being done at that time when it's going to be for the beginning of the classes and all that, then it can be done that. So then you can use Akshay Tritiya, Chaitra Gorda Tritiya, Maga, Gorda Saptami, Falguna Gorda Saptami. Okay, well, these are all going to be within the Uttarayana. Yeah. Okay. Sambartana, graduation, best also is in Uttarayana. So that means you have to be planning beforehand. He gets the Upanayanam before they're starting in the Vedic, before they start the education. But nowadays, because most don't have that qualification of the background, so during the education, then they actually get qualified. They develop the proper, you know, brahminical mood and all that. Then you can, then during these, the Uttarayana. And Sambartana, graduation. Okay, northern course of the sun, Chaitra is the best, should be done during Gora Paksha, and that, okay. Then Karnaveda. Okay, Acharya Sri Rama. Karnaveda should be done at the auspicious time, the 12 to 16 days from the day of birth. So it appears it can also be done as so young as a baby, or in the sixth or seventh month from birth, or in an odd year, you know, like we saw, you know, the first, third, it mentions seventh, like that of the child. So even as it goes up, so if someone's getting it later than odd years. Okay. It also mentions the month of the child's birth. It's other times. It'll be, those are the best, but if not, then it can also be during the even. Okay, Vidyarambha. Okay. According to B.V. Raman, the best time is the fifth day in the fifth month in the fifth year from the child's birth. So everything five. Okay. Then auspicious times. Okay. Yeah. And then that's it. Be neat. Okay. 49. So any questions on samskaras? Yes. No, maybe, kind of. No? Okay. Yeah. So then, you know, as we mentioned before, is then the samskaras fall into the category of the Vedic. So the religious, so that means the secondary aspects of, you know, consideration, what's important. The primary is going to be the, you know, pure devotion. And then the secondary will be those elements that will support that. And so those elements that support then are dealt with in a religious way according to the nature of what they are. So that means then it's going to be based on Shastra. And then, of course, there's going to be, you know, practical application experience into one's own situations and everything like that. So it takes on is that since you're going to deal with these aspects of religion, it's either you follow what's been recommended by the acharyas and you know from the scriptures, or you're going to make up your own. It's that simple. Means that the conditioned living entity can't function without some form of external religious activities. Means if they're on the platform of pure devotion, they're an Uttamadhikari, they can just chant and they don't worry about these things. They don't require. Though it doesn't mean that they may not be doing because that's what's going on around them and they're favorable in devotional service. But they don't need to do them. Right? The Madhyamas will be involved because it's comfortable. It's a comfortable situation. Right? It matches your nature, so therefore there's less trouble. The neophyte has to do according to the nature, because otherwise they will be unsatisfied, right? Because they have a tendency to identify with these things and figure it's me and I'm doing what's best for me and, you know, and all these kind of elements. And so it's natural that it will be there. And as we see, they're very auspicious. They create a very nice environment in which then it becomes very natural for, to perform religious and devotional act, means the devotional activities, because it's a pleasant atmosphere. There's no distraction by things other than Krishna consciousness, right? Just it's a nice atmosphere. It's nice. Like you have the temple, it's a festival day. So you decorate it with, you know, flowers and banana trees and, you know, make mandalas and nice things like that. And so these are all Vedic elements, but the Pancharatra also then recommends them because they go nicely with serving the Lord. But you see is that they're happening in the spiritual world because of the samskars. Nanda Baba is following the Jati Karma and name-giving ceremony and all these things. And therefore, he's having a festival for Krishna. So therefore, whenever they see all these major things, then they're based on that. So the religious element is always there. So the Pancharatra uses those Vedic elements that are, favorable and progressive in the practice of pure bhakti. So we see they all go together. So we have to see as if it's just, oh, we chant, we don't get into those things, and then we're not just sitting under a tree chanting, then either it's ignorance that they don't like, or it's even, you could say, xenophobic. They just don't like it because it's another culture. So you find is generally the farther west you go, the more they are intolerant of other cultures than themselves. Right? So like that, you know, so otherwise means tolerant means you may not do it, but you others are doing it, it's fine. Like that. So, but as you go, then it has to be done in this way. And so it's just a matter of these are the things given. Prabhupada always talks about the Dasa Samskar, and that's because that's what's given in the book here by the Acharya. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur then found this and printed this. And so people want to say is that, oh, this is not ours. Bhaktisiddhanta accepted it. So the point is who do we listen to? Do we listen to Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur and our line of acharyas there? Or are we going to listen to the Sahajiyas and caste Goswamis who are always going to throw a wrench into the works on these things? Why? Either they're not into these rituals because they just chant Hare Krishna, the Sahajiyas, or the caste Goswamis think that why should we be doing this? We're not born in Brahmin families. They're born in Brahmin families. Only they should be doing the samskar. So therefore, what has been given is bogus because you guys aren't Brahmins. And so therefore, we should be doing these things for you means we will be having a livelihood. So that's much of the time when it comes down to the fight over the samskar padatis. is who's going to get the opportunity to get the dakshins. So when you see, if you go back a few hundred years where, they follow these things nicely, but at the same time, there's degradation in the consciousness where it's just more of an element of it's religious, it's there, but they're focused on the artha they're going to get from it. So then we see is that then many times, and they're trying to get rid of someone else's influence so that they get it all. I mean, if there's two different groups and two different polities, who's going to get this? Who's going to get the opportunity? So they try to get rid of one for the other. So you saw at the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that was a big fight. The Goswamis didn't want that this Vaishnav Padati was coming up. They had already gotten rid of it, you know, before. And now they were the ones doing everything. And now it comes back up again. Oh, it's a big problem. So yes, devotees will come up and hear these things. Oh, that was from this, you know, just like that bogus thing is Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami, you know, somebody threw the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the well and he died, and you know, all these different things. And they come up with all these bogus stories just to throw off the Gaudiya Vaishnavas who are following the line, the strict line we see, especially coming down through Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Before that, they don't complain too much, and those guys aren't. Well, they're not, the Acharyas aren't here, they're not here, but from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they got problems because they pointed out how they're apasampradayas and they're not following nicely. And so then they go after. And so devotees go to these people, they hear from them, and then they get doubts. It's like the other day someone contacted, you know, some doubts on the timings of when the different, the Bhagavatam and who spoke what and the Vedas and all this, because they're listening to these modern academics. You know, devotees go into the academic field, they go into Indology, they know what the academics say, and because they, you know, want to keep in the good books of all the academics so that they have their positions and everything, then they may tell others the bogus ideas that the modern academicians say about the Vedic literatures and all these, you know, time frames. And so then it percolates down, and then it creates confusion because Prabhupada says one thing, the Acharyas say, you know, they support that, and then Bhagavatam says, but then, oh, but these academics say nothing. And of course, academics are fabulous. You know, they work so hard, you know, they studied so much and all that. And, but at the same time is there's no preaching done. In fact, they disturb the peace and focus of the neophyte devotees, and sometimes even distract a bit, you know, not so seriously, but, you know, just that the Madhyamas take it up and also preach this, and then it distracts more the neophytes. And so they're getting their degree and being situated, maintaining it, not only has not been used and they've made no devotees from it, they haven't advanced their own Krishna consciousness, they are disturbing the minds of the general devotees. So overall, then, as the Shastra said, those who are scholarly, and that's the identity, and based on that, then they think that this is the important thing in their life, then yes, you see is no, it's against devotional service. They've added nothing to the movement. Everybody else was doing something before they joined. If you bring that with you, it's just like Prabhupada had when, you know, once all the hippies started joining and all that, you know, the first, you know, few years they came in, however they were, but at one point he just said, you want to live in the temple, you shave your head the day you move in. Because otherwise, then you keep hair, then the other devotees who were hippies and loved their long hair. I mean, hippies loved their long hair. If nothing else, yeah, put them in a suit, fine, but they have to have the long hair. Right? So they're so attached to their hair that it might get distracted. So Prabhupada made the rule, no, as soon as you move in, hair is gone so that no one else becomes distracted. And so whatever your background was, you know, who cared? It didn't matter. You came, now you're in Krishna consciousness. So now that, oh, I'm an academic and I have this and that, it's like, who cares? Who are you preaching to that actually, who are you having effectiveness with preaching that anybody actually cares? You know, and so it's all this mentality that will go after and have that atheistic view that we don't need the samskaras, you know, we're in the Western culture. You know, even we try to do some kind of community thing, we'll base it on what the, you know, the Catholics are doing and things like that. You know, and that's because the person who made up the program was from a Catholic background. You know, so it works nice, yeah, but it's any good. But why don't we just use what is our own system? Prabhupada already gave a system for community development. You know, he developed it during the League of Devotees. Why not use that? You know, and the standard preaching is this: you cultivate people, you're kind to people, you spend the time with people and all that. So whatever it is, but so we don't need these other, we already have our own culture, but we either accept it and it fits nicely with and supports the philosophy and our own practices, or we will practice and follow some so-called cultural things that may be opposed, like especially if one's living in the more contemporary liberal things, it's based on atheism. It's based on economics, on artha and kama, no dharma and no moksha. So how is that going to be supportive? It's going the wrong direction, artha for kama. It's not going dharma for moksha to bhakti. It's not going in that direction. So how is it progressive? They think they're progressive. I'm liberal, so I'm progressive. No, you're regressive because you don't accept religion. You see, the more someone is into the modern progressive, the more they're against the Vedic culture. What do you call it? You know, where they're connected? There's a name for that, where you increase this, you increase the other thing. You increase the liberalness, you increase the atheistic view. You reduce it.
Proportional?
Sorry?
Proportional?
Yeah, that'll work. Yeah, so like that, then we see is that it's not progressive. They only deem themselves progressive, but in actuality and practice, it's not progressive at all. The ones closer to the middle, okay, are more progressive, but as far as they get more out, then it gets worse. Just like conservatives, the ones near the middle, then that works better. So as they go farther out and more extreme, it gets a problem. You know, so that's the whole point, is the actual middle is Krishna consciousness, not a compromise. Krishna consciousness is the middle path. This idea will compromise best of both worlds. That's not the middle path. That's taking this and taking that. It's not the middle. So, because they can't combine these elements. They contradict. So in this case, they take this, and in that case, they take that. So they take the least problematic, you know, of the things. They can't combine them. So it's not actually. Okay. So then we'll stop here, and then we'll start the Sandarbha on Monday. Yeah. Also, I think it's Purnima on Monday. Yeah, so auspicious day. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.